and runs through Sunday, October 12th at MLK Library and other venues. On Friday evening, the festival will present the DC premiere of A State of Passion, which follows Dr. Ghassan Abu-Sittah, who after working around the clock in Gaza under relentless bombardment, has become the face of a global resistance. Details at dcpfaf.org.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the collision. This is the part where I say he's Etan Thomas, he's Chuck Modiano, I'm Dave Zirin, here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW in Washington, D.C. and beyond. We are the place that changes the world one broadcast at a time, and we are also the place where sports and politics collide. Etan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm not quite sure who our other co-host is since it's somebody without a mustache.
Well, it wasn't coming off like that. It's really a clean shave. So it's a thin shave. So, yeah, I guess.
Chuck, Chuck, I would not recognize you on the street, man. I'm trying not to cuss because it's like that was as iconic as Tom Selleck in the 80s. I just can't.
No, it's here. It's just short, but too short, I guess.
Man, not unlike a certain rapper from Oakland, it is indeed too short. We've got so much to talk about. The WNBA is on fire now, both on the court and off, and we are going to talk about that. We also need to speak about what's happening in Chicago now and perhaps some advice we might have for another city that looks to be under federal occupation at the moment, but frankly, on a much more extreme level than even we've seen in D.C. I mean, Black Hawk helicopters descending onto housing projects. And I think one of the things we want to talk about is how this is also about gentrification. Given some of their targets, particularly overwhelmingly African-American housing projects that they've been trying to tear down and build condos at forever. So some wrinkles there that I don't think you're hearing other places. We also want to talk about an Israeli ceasefire, where a magical one where they still get to kill people. And then also, that's an odd one. And then also, if we have time, we really do want to break down why Israel, it's not just a question of protesting. It's actually a sports question, and they should be banned from all international competition, including the forthcoming World Cup and the World Cup qualifiers. But first, I got to just fan out for a quick second about a certain NBA player and ask Ketan Thomas, who is an absolute stellar big man for 11 years in the NBA. I read this morning, Ketan, just real quick, okay. Victor Wembanyama is waking up at 4:30 every morning and studying Shaolin Kung Fu. And he has shaved his head. And he's having this special diet, and he's working out with Hakeem Olajuwon on post moves, which is something all of us last year were like, why isn't this incredible athlete who's 7'7", I know he says 7'5", he's not, why aren't they playing him closer to the hoop? So, Ketan, my two-part question for you is, does practicing something like Shaolin Kung Fu actually matter when it comes to playing in the NBA, and were martial arts ever part of your training?
No, it wasn't for me. I put Malcolm in Kung Fu, and he did it all the way up to a black belt. We didn't want him to be a black belt, because then if you get into something, you have to register your hands and everything like that. But he went all the way up to a black belt, and then he stopped, and it helped him tremendously. I mean, the discipline, the way that he moved, the different – I mean, I can't go on and on. So to hear that Wimby is doing that is pretty impressive. He was already – everything that I've heard about him has really been impressive, that he's going to be like a generational talent. But working out with Hakeem Olajuwon and – yeah, I mean, but ask Kareem, who really studied the martial arts and how much it helped him, and he would always talk about it. And he studied under Bruce Lee.
Sure did.
Oh yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing to hear.
Yeah, anybody out there who has seen the movie Game of Death, where Bruce Lee squares off against, can remake Game of Death with Wemby. That's all I got to say.
Who they get from the square off against?
I've been trying. You know what? It's so funny. I've been trying to figure that out all darn morning, and I'm not sure.
I mean, Jet Li is pretty tough.
Yes. Is he too old? Would be my question.
Is he too old? Right. So I don't know any of the young and upcoming, but I'm sure they could find somebody.
They got to find somebody who's not like, Will Smith's son or something. They got to find like an actual Shaolin warrior who can jump in there. Somebody with Jeet, the Jeet Kune Do of Bruce Lee, because the thought of Wemby throwing kicks and jabs is just, or Tiger style even.
I mean, it's great. It's great. I just watched the Karate Kid. There's another Karate Kid that came out, and it was with Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio. And Jackie Chan's kind of old. You know what I mean? Yeah, I guess we're getting old here. I'm looking at it. I was like, when did Jackie Chan get so old? What happened?
Exactly. I've had the same Jackie Chan thoughts, and I would worry that we would bring Jet Li out there against Wemby, and it just would not go well for Jet Li. Like spraining ankles, cracking a hip. I mean, we need somebody young, but
somebody young. You're right.
I digress. This was a fun thing to just ask you about, though, because cool. when that came across my news right before we came on the air, and I was like, wait a minute, he shaved his head too to do the Shaolin? I mean, just amazing. But I digress. You know, Chuck, you're in Vegas, correct?
I am.
So you got to get this first question here. Last night, the Las Vegas Aces go up 3-0 against the Phoenix Mercury in the finals, with Asia Wilson showing the world again why she's the best player on earth. An incredible shot with 0.3 seconds to go. An incredibly furious comeback by the Mercury that was really done in by the most bizarre shot at the end, where they had a chance to go up, and Ms. Bonner was just killing it for the Mercury, yet they didn't even throw her the ball. Wild shot inside, and it just set everything up for, frankly, doing what the Mercury should have done. But you give it to your best player and let them cook, which is exactly what Asia did. What were your thoughts, Chuck, on the game and where we see Asia historically? Because clearly, by any historical measure, Las Vegas has this wrapped up.
With respect to Lisa Leslie
Candace Parker, to many who never got to play in the WNBA, like Cheryl Miller. But we're just talking about the WNBA here. I believe Aja Wilson is already the greatest player to ever play in the WNBA. So as in the WNBA, that is my feeling. She won another MVP, her third. I believe she should have won four. I believe one was taken away from her. She is in a class by herself. And one of the things that I'm really happy about this season, that we got to see so many things with the spotlight moved away with Caitlin Clark injured, is Aja Wilson. And her greatness was not highlighted in the way that it should have been previously. And it is now. It wasn't last year. She probably had the greatest season in WNBA history, breaking Diana Taurasi's 18-year scoring record, doing incredible work in rebounds and blocks. She shows up third in steals as a big person, which we haven't really even seen in the NBA since, like, maybe Akeem Olajuwon showed up around that time, who we were just talking about. So for me, this is beautiful. This is the year we get to really honor her. And then that 17-game win streak that happened at the end of the year, once they got the team together, and when I mean get that team together, I'm talking about maybe move Jewel Lloyd to the bench, who's declining a little bit, making the trade for Melissa Smith, and they click, and she put the team on their back. So what you saw last night with that last shot, which should be a painting in a museum, is really a coronation of what Aja Wilson has been doing for years, but hidden from many people.
Atan, your thoughts, particularly that end sequence there where Becky Hammon was just the coach at Vegas was just like, we're ride or die with Aja Wilson on this last shot. You know, something the Mercury, I thought, just did not do.
I mean, okay, all right, let me go, because the shot was amazing. And we've talked about shot, but we got to give props to the Mercury. They balled out. They had an amazing comeback in the fourth quarter, you know, tied it up. I mean, Saitu Sabali, I hope she's okay. She took a hard spill. But Alyssa Thomas, Dewana Bonner, you know what I mean? Kalia Cooper, they were balling. Like, all of them. Look at their stat lines. They all were balling. It's just that, you know what I mean? Aja Wilson was just balling more. You know, it was a great game. But that setup at the end, with Aja, you know, taking it on herself, you know, when she was double-teamed and turned around, it was, like, iconic. And like you see I posted it, the still shot of it with her up, you know, in the air with it's that's an iconic image. Like you said, it should be hanging up in somewhere, you know. But I thought, you know, now to say where she lands in the all time, that's tough. I don't even have that conversation. She's incredible, though. Yeah. I will just say there. She's absolutely incredible.
I should have thrown Cynthia Cooper in there right away when we're talking about WNBA, who even at the end of her career was, you know, winning MVPs at the beginning. It would have been nice to see her more years. It would have been nice to see Lynette Woodward. It would be nice to see Cheryl Miller. So I always feel even funny having a greatest discussion.
You know, it's interesting because Cynthia Cooper, there are a couple of things, because that's the first person who came to mind, because she was the first person to really wow us when the WNBA started lo the many years ago. But at the same time, the level of competition is much higher now. Yeah. But then on the flip side, Cynthia Cooper was, from an age perspective, past her prime because of the WNBA was. So I would, the time machine I wish existed where I could get 24-year-old Cynthia Cooper in the mix with all the great players that are there today. Nafisa Collier comes to mind, who I thought, you know, easily could have won the MVP this year, and it would have been very proud and wonderful if she had, particularly given the political climate right now. But, you know, but obviously, thank you on that. But it's tough to ignore the winning streak, as you said, Chuck. And it's also tough to ignore these shooting percentages. I mean, that's to me where Ms. Wilson really separates herself. When you're rocking 50, 40, and 85 from the line while also getting more than 10 boards a game. I mean, we were talking about Wemby before this started. And it's what I think people, frankly, are going to expect from someone like Wemby going forward. Like, Chuck, you mentioned the big person who could still get steals, Akeem style. I mean, that's what Wemby is setting himself up for with those hands. And, you know, in Wilson, there is actually a blueprint that I think is, frankly, more clear than any NBA blueprint of what people expect Wemby to be. In terms of the stat lines, your thought, Etan?
Yeah, I definitely agree. But I you mentioned Nafisa Collier, so we gotta pause there because she's been absolutely amazing. And I want to read this quote from her before we go to a break, and we could come back and we could really talk about her and take a deep dive, because she's the stance that she's taking is going to be so important, and the timing of it is so important going into this collective bargaining. I can't say it enough. So let me read her statement and then we'll go to a break. Her statement was, for her to start her speech saying she has the utmost respect for me and for the players, and then to turn around and call me a liar 3 minutes later, denying words that I heard come straight out of her mouth, I think it just speaks to that lack of accountability. And so I really have nothing further to say. And she's talking about Kathy Engelbert. So let's go to a break and let's take a deep dive into this. And we'll be right back with more of The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
White people, I am not your Negro. Yeah, black people, y'all just got your hero. All these rap demons, I'm about to depot. Me and Asada, my ATLian alter ego. The Queen of Sheba and Musa Keita, producer heater. Salute your teacher, my newest seat is a future leader. A testament of my evolution to excellence. To be or not to be human, that's what the question is. I'm still the answer regardless, rappers is moving targets. Acknowledge me as the smartest passenger moving forward. My little sister bars blast like Kalashnikov. Just because heavy bass dance like Baryshnikov. The sound pierce like bullets and swords from a nation under attack. Like bulletin boards, and I'm repping the foundation to the fullest, of course. Today another life was lost and it could have been yours. Whether in Colorado or Collie Park, you but a mile apart from the sharpness of my remarks. The black oligarch making weaponry out of art. My supplier, Soul Messiah, told me we gotta talk. I walk through the dark. Now do I roll deep or do I hold heat? Now am I laid back or a control freak? Rocking the crown gilded in gold leaf. I'm from a place where the people dream but don't sleep.
You're now tuned in to the classics. This fine art, lead us work to the masters. Ain't met a man or woman yet, cause the past.
We are back here on The Collision, about to do a deep dive into a very serious labor battle that's a brewing that could lead to a WNBA lockout right when the league is poised for an incredible amount of success. And Etan just brought us into the break with the words of Nafisa Collier, arguably the best, if not second. We just talked about Azra Wilson, but Nafisa Collier, if you want to make the case that that's the best player right now in the WNBA after shooting, and I just looked this up, 53% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from the line, 50, 40, 90 for the Lynx. There's as great as Wilson is, it's perfectly acceptable to me to be like, this past year, Nafisa Collier was the best player. She's that good. She's that important. And this is rare, Etan, because you have this experience in the basketball labor world where one of the best players is also the person going up to that mic and making it plain.
Oh, no, it's absolutely great timing. And, you know, she's been getting a lot of pushback and a lot of people saying that that wasn't her place. I keep hearing that over and over again. You know what I mean? That wasn't her place to say that. And why is she revealing private conversations? And, you know, you hear that but this is from the media. This is from Frank Isola, our good friend, Frank Isola.
Never heard of him.
Goes on. Yeah, never heard. He's such a, we're going to have to address him eventually. He's on a whole, He went on a whole tangent about us and the collision. So we got to do it eventually. But that aside, that there has been so much pushback. But the fact that she is uniting, she's uniting Caitlin Clark fans. She united Angel Reese fans. You know, she united Paige Buckets fans. And all right now, because that is literally, and we've been repeating it, that is going to be the play of the WNBA. They follow the play of the NBA and try to splinter the players. Try to, you know what I mean, pull people apart. And she's doing the opposite and addressing it head on. So I can't say enough about Nafisa Collier and the stance that she took. It's really courageous, especially the position that she is as someone who could have arguably been co-MVP this year. That level of player, it's really remarkable.
Chuck, before I throw it right to you for your thoughts on this, so do collect and organize them even without your mustache superpowers. I can't stop staring.
I see.
At
it must be part of the video because it's light, it's there, but you know, next week it'll be appropriate.
There is no mustache there. We can't talk about this. It's like, you know, Star Wars Phantom Menace. Yeah. This is Chuck Phantom Mustache. Take it to you.
It's an illusion. Go ahead.
Atan, of course it matters to the general public that it is one of the two best players, Nafisa Collier, making these statements. And as we have discussed previously on the collision, and maybe Chuck can expand on this, mm-hmm. This is a little bit different from other sports lockouts in that it certainly mm-hmm. looks, no matter what the media is saying, my perception, and of course say if you disagree, is that the fans are lining up behind the players in a way that you don't necessarily have seen in different male, let's just be straight up about it, sports lockouts. And that might be worth examination why it's the case. But Atan, from that former player's perspective, mm-hmm. I mean, I just said it matters to fans that it's Collier. Does it matter to players when one of the people who is speaking out for the union is also like an absolute, kick butt person on the court? Does that matter?
Of course it does. You know, I was part of the executive committee during the lockout in 2011. And, you know, I was vocal, but I wasn't one of the superstars. You know, I wrote an article in ESPN, and David Stern was so pissed. He was so pissed, but I wrote an article kind of examining the greediness of the David Stern and the rest of the governors. And I did it from their perspective. And I talked and I echoed the different things that I heard them say in the meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Well, David Stern got upset because they only want to be able to put one voice out there, and they do a great job of controlling the narrative. So they had the players looking at viewed as being greedy, they're being unreasonable. You know, we want to do this, but the players are, we want to seize them. They're just holding everything up. They did a great job of doing that, and they have all of the media in their back pocket. So as soon as we had a meeting, they gave like the media, which you're talking about ESPN, ABC, everybody, like footnotes and talking points that they wanted them to say. Like it would literally be minutes after the meeting, and then we would turn on the thing and we're like, oh wow, how did they know this so quickly? You know what I mean? And it's very calculated. So for a player of Fee's caliber to be able to stand up and say the things that she's saying, and like I said, bring the different, because the WNBA is split into different fan bases. You know what I mean? You have the Caitlin Clark fans, then you have the Caitlin Clark mob, which are two different fan bases, but then you have Angel Reese. Then I could say that maybe, you know, Paige and Angel Reese fans kind of, they cross, but with this, with those statements and what she said that Caitlin Clark, that she specifically said about Caitlin Clark, saying that she needs, I don't have it right in front of me, but it was something to the effect of she needs to be crawling on her knees, thankful to us for giving us the platform. I'm paraphrasing, but something to that effect, right? And that she wouldn't be able to make all of this money that she's making if it wasn't for the WNBA platform. Now, Caitlin Clark created her platform in college before she got to the WNBA. You know what I mean? I mean, Angel Reese could. So if you would have named any other players except for those two, I'll say, okay, maybe. But not those two. They don't need W. So I like I said, I can't say enough about Fee. I think it's great what she's doing.
Ridiculous. And again, before I go to check, Caitlin Clark, obviously a big shot across the bow at Caitlin Clark and her fans. Do you think that has potential, Etan, maybe to bring those forces together to say we stand with all the players? Is there the potential for that, particularly since Caitlin Clark, my understanding is, you know, I think at this point she has been more vocal for the union after being called out by Kelsey Plum. Does that sound right to you?
Well, yeah, but you still have the Caitlin Clark mob. Like, right. We talked about it last week when you were here, Dan Takakakich. And he was all immediately, how dare you do this to Caitlin Clark and how did Caitlin Clark? And I was like, bro, like she's speaking up for everybody, including Caitlin Clark. Like, are you, you know, but the mob is so focused on Caitlin Clark, you know what I mean? They can't even see what somebody is including her in it and fighting for her as well. But real Caitlin Clark fans did see it. That's why I differentiate. The mob is one thing. And then the Caitlin Clark fans are another group. The mob is not interested in the WNBA. They're only interested in weaponizing Caitlin Clark. So that's a totally different group. But yeah, as far as the Caitlin Clark fans and the Angel Reese fans, and those are the ones that are uniting. Now, I can't speak for the Caitlin Clark mob because they're so focused on trying to weaponize her. Nothing else matters.
Chuck, you're up, man. You've been silent for too long. What's going on? What your thoughts on all of this?
Well, let me put a fine point on exactly what was said by Nafisa Collier regarding Caitlin Clark. She's talking about Commissioner Engelbert, and in this private conversation they had, Engelbert said, well, only the losers complain about the refs when she asked about accountability. And I say that reminding you that the last season ended on a horrible call, in my view. They called a call on Breonna Stewart. And, you know, Minnesota could have rightfully won that championship. But let me add this. I also asked how she planned to fix the fact that players like Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and Paige Beckers, who are clearly driving massive revenue for the league, are making so little for their first 4 years. Her response was, Caitlin should be grateful. She makes $16 million off the court because without the platform that the WNBA gives her, she wouldn't be making anything. In that same conversation, she told me players should be on their knees thanking their lucky stars for the media rights deal that I got them. That's the mentality that is driving our league. So this is the passage Nafisa Collier mentioned as part of that private conversation. And throughout that, her words, she was talking about the lack of accountability and that the league kept saying we need to have sustainability. And the subtext to that is you're only getting 9% of the revenue. WNBA players are only getting 9% of the revenue, and we're going to justify that and not give you something closer to 50% of the revenue like NBA players and like generally other leagues, because we have to pour back into the league. And she's saying that's nonsense. And not only that, but also it hasn't been talked about. She's not just an incredible player. She's not just the vice president of the WNBA. She is the co-founder of Unrivaled. Her and Breonna Stewart started a league in the offseason because WNBA players get paid so low, they got to go to Russia and all of these other countries in the offseason just to get paid anywhere near their worth. That's embarrassing for the WNBA. That's embarrassing for America. But she has a level of leverage being in Unrivaled, being the co-founder of Unrivaled, that maybe no other sports team star has had in recent negotiations.
Wow.
Let me add one more thing real quick, because David Burrell of the New York Times, he wrote an article and he said, if WNBA players received a similar percentage of basketball-related income as NBA players, the top stars would be making more than $3 million a year. Instead, they earn less than 10% of that. Now, if you can look at that and say that there is no problem with that, then something is wrong.
I see the packed stadiums, whether Caitlin Clark is playing or not. I see the families coming out. I see the communities in support. I've been spending a lot of time in Brooklyn, New York recently, where the Liberty play. You can't imagine the degree to which that's taken over the basketball mind in Brooklyn. Like the idea that Kathy Engelbert is the person people should be grateful to when people should be grateful to the players and the fans for the support. It just shows to me, it's actually kind of Trumpian, where you take everything and turn it on its head. You're as frankly as awful as possible to people on the theory and as indecent to people as you can be on the theory of just like, well, that's the new normal. And if you're indecent to people, the fans will just assume that everybody is disgusting and a pox on both their houses. Like Atan, when you were coming up, it seemed like people were trying to get the moral upper hand in these negotiations publicly. And now it's like she's going low because we're in this Trumpian age. And I love the fact that Nafisa Collier is coming back with the kind of unified positivity of solidarity instead of saying, oh, well, I guess everything's just in the mud right now. Because when two people are in the mud, even if one is right, everybody's dirty.
You know, it's interesting. I heard Brian Scalabrine. I got to start watching that show. He listened to that show.
I think so. It's odd.
I know I do, but they keep, you know, it's on when I'm driving the kids to school. But I was listening to him, and he was saying, you know, why don't the players just admit what it is? It's really that you want more money. Why are you saying that you're being treated poorly and putting all this other stuff in there when that's not really what it is? It's just that you want more money. And he kept making that point over and over again. And I was like, do you know it's a collection of everything? Yes, the percentage is completely ridiculous of what they get, number one. Then, yes, the whole mentality of the way that the statements that Kathy Engelbert made is a reflection on how she views the players. That's number two. You know, the way that they are treated as far as how they're the referees, the way that they're facilitated, everything is all involved in why they – it's not one or the other. So it's like he was trying to make – he was leaning towards the greedy player that just wants more money and just say that's what it is. And I'm like, why? And he's a former player. So he's seen these different, you know, negotiations, and he's seen how the NBA, they do, when I talk about that, they did a masterful job of really casting all the NBA players as not responsible with their money, not, you know, all they are greedy, and they have then they conveniently have these different articles picking the worst scenarios to try to cast all the players as one way and then slide in different things else. Now, I can mention this as well. I remember David Stern listening to him pushing of why we need an age limit, and he said it over and over again, and quoting Stephen A. Smith and his berating of Kwame Brown. And the different article that, and I keep forgetting her name, is it Sally Jenkins? Sally Jenkins wrote that were all incorrect, all lies of saying that Kwame Brown didn't know how to order food. He didn't know how to go to the dry cleaning. He didn't know what difference between a soup spoon and all this different crazy stuff. And I'm looking, I'm like, wait a minute. I go out to eat Kwame all the time. That's not true. You know what I mean? But it was all calculated and a reason why they did it to try to push a different narrative, and it's all related. And Scalabrine should know this. You know what I mean? I know you crossed over, and now you're part of the media, you're not a player anymore, but you should remember the way that it works. So if you're adding to that narrative of putting all the players of being greedy, I gotta just say, man, that's whack, man. Like, don't forget where you came from. You was a player. Don't forget that.
All I'll say, and then we have to go to break right now, is to say that workplace grievances can extend beyond the number on your check, to deny that says to me that you've never spoken to anybody in the WNBA as to what their lives are like in between games, travel, facilities. Because if you speak to WNBA players, as we have, you know that those things matter in collective bargaining. They're not fake. That's real as real as real as rain. The second thing is, it makes me wonder if you've ever spoken to an auto worker, if you've never spoken to a nurse, You've never spoken to one of the hard workers in the Postal Service or UPS. Because if you did, you would know that things like workplace injuries, conditions, bathroom breaks, they're all part of your union fight. To say it's just about what's in your check just says to me you don't talk to a lot of working class people. Or if you do talk to them, it's pure superficial nonsense and you're not actually asking them questions about your lives, their lives. You're not being curious. But I digress. Let's go to break right now. We're a little late on the break. When we come back, we know what we need to talk about. We absolutely do. It's about a ceasefire that hasn't ceased. We'll be back right after this on The Collision.
Palestine's been occupied for decades, but a home for centuries. This land is generations of my family's memories. To plant, grow, and nurture the symbol of peace. The olive trees guaranteed that our people could eat. Living with limitations, pushed down by the occupation. Wanna see the pain? Take a look at the people's faces. Imagine being kicked out of the only house you ever known. We're praying for our souls while they're praying on our homes. It's not easy to put this into words. Looking at my baby sister, is this something she deserves? Growing up in a world where she's not treated the same. Denied the right to live free because of where she came. They wanna occupy this land. Won't let them occupy my mind. I stay occupied aside as I write about my life. Because my only mission is to make people listen. This one's for Shashara, hoping it can make a difference. Cause the same thing happened in 48. My grandparents got evicted and forced to move away to the refugee camp in Gaza. No, nothing has changed. They can never return, so that's where I am today. Getting calls from cousins to see if I am alive. This year is not fireworks that are lighting the sky. We're trying to celebrate an Eid and keep the faith. I guess you could say it's how memories.
Wow, we're back here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. Aton Thomas, Chuck Modiano, I'm Dave Zirin. Fun drive next week. Get ready for that for WPFW. We have a new app for WPFW that has so many bells and whistles. So cool. Access to Pacifica, access to shows, access to so many Pacifica archive instances that it's just too terrific. Great for the car. Great for the jog. Get the app, WPFW. Gotta throw it first and foremost to Chuck to maybe spark this one off. I mean, Chuck, we're talking about a ceasefire between Israel and, they keep saying, Hamas. That's the way the news does it. Like, the deal is between Israel and Hamas instead of, you know, what if they were like between the hyper right wing Likudite fascist government and Hamas? They don't say that. But so we're going to say Israel Palestine here because of objecting to that media framing. So they're talking about a peace deal that had kids in Gaza. We saw the footage just dancing with relief because they were like, we're not going to get bombed. And how that in and of itself was heartbreaking, that's what constitutes a better life, is not having a bomb dropped on your head or a sniper shooting you for sport. But Chuck, the ceasefire hasn't really ceased either. What's going on, and what do you think the posture should be right now of some of the local communities here that have been protesting for two straight years?
Based on history, particularly since October 2023, based on all of the times that there was a ceasefire that would have been not just accepted by Palestine, but also the United States, that Israel denied, that Israel destroyed, that Israel like purposely did not want to have. And then when you talk about the last few days and previous quote unquote ceasefires, when Israel never stopped killing, that we have to take every single quote unquote ceasefire, not with a grain of salt, but with a giant bag of salt, with salt everywhere, like the ocean and the sea. So until you actually have a prolonged period of time where Israel's not bombing, then we can't trust any deal, because that has been the history. And not only that, but the last few days. And then you're right, the language that we hear It's always the militant, Hamas, all of that stuff. And you know what's interesting? And this came out in the movie The Encampments, where they interviewed somebody who worked at Columbia University. But they interviewed him in a way that disguised his voice. He couldn't show his face. And every time in communications, when he wrote down Palestinians or Palestine, Columbia University leadership said, no, no, cross that out. You have to write Hamas here. You have to write negative wording here or fascism here. And I only bring up the Columbia University is because we all know this. We all know the media practices this all the time and changing the language. But in that case, we had somebody on the inside saying that's exactly what was being done on the university level who aren't even media. So the way the media works is completely controlled by what Israel wants, what AIPAC wants, what ADL wants. And the language is completely, as you started, you don't hear Israel, the fascist Israel who have murdered anywhere from 67,000 to 600,000, which is by some estimates. We don't hear that language. But Netanyahu gets invited to speak in America and at the White House under either president.
A great point. Etan, you've got an amazing solidarity shirt on right there. I hope people see it at some point. It really is, man, striking. I wanted to ask you similarly your thoughts. Like, and as you answer, like, there was a part of me that really was thinking, like, okay, this peace agreement come up by Trump's people, it's terrible for so many reasons. But that being said, it's like the only reason they're coming to the table in the first place also is because people have resisted. I mean, you look at the popularity of Israel in the United States, historic lows, popularity among the Jewish community, which they always use us to weaponize and justify, historic lows, young Jews, subterranean majority of Jews voting for a mayor in New York, Zohran Mamdani, who has pledged to arrest Netanyahu if he comes to the city. I mean, this is a remarkable turn, and I have to think that has something to do with the ceasefire, even if, you know, in the words of Public Enemy, you know, you really can't trust it.
Can't trust it at all. I mean, and that, and I didn't want to be pessimistic, so you know, I thought that when we talked about this, that you'd probably share, you know, my hesitancy to really celebrate, you know, and it was great seeing the young children celebrating. And that's what made it even more heartbreaking, because I just don't trust it. You know, I mean, I have some stats here. You know, during the last ceasefire, Israel killed over 150 Palestinians during the ceasefire. You know what I mean? So the previous ceasefire started January 19th, 2025, right? And Israel ended it without warning less than 2 months later. You know, and during that ceasefire, Israel committed to allowing aid into Gaza, right? But on March 2nd, when the ceasefire was still in effect, Israel started a complete blockade on aid entering Gaza and allowed nothing in. You know, Israel, you know, officially ended the deal on March 18th. With a coordinated surprise attack that killed over 400 Palestinians across Gaza. Many of them were children. So, I mean, just looking at the history and the pattern, and this is not like going way back. We're talking about, you know, 2024. We're talking about something that just happened. And it's, you know, I see Trump trying to take credit for this and pat himself on the back and say, I did this, and, you know, doing the victory lap, and, you know, Then other Fox News saying, well, maybe he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize, and everything is so like calculated, and I don't believe any of it, So talk about how even as the announcement was made that there was a ceasefire, Israel was still bombing, still killing, still attacking while it was being made, while the little kids were dancing. While people were taking victory laps, they were still bombing.
Yeah, Chuck, I'd love for you to respond to that. But also, Chuck, I really do want you to say, like, if you, I know you've been out of town, but yeah. I really do wonder if you've been online and seen what groups like the Palestinian Youth Movement, Jewish Voice for Peace, certainly, like what some of the groups that have been real stakeholders in the struggle are saying, not so much about the ceasefire, because I would bet $1 million plus one that they agree with what Etan just said about, like, you cannot trust this and we need to stay vigilant. But what kind of actions do you think need to be taken right now? I mean, you've got general strikes in Italy against this. You've got hundreds of thousands protesting across Europe. You've got Netanyahu openly playing footsie with Tommy Robinson, who is the leading Nazi in England, the person who Elon Musk paid millions of dollars and also fought to get out of prison because he was such a Nazi. That's where Netanyahu is standing right now. People see that in a way that has a clarity that's unprecedented historically. Chuck, action. What are you thinking? And also, what do you think about Etan's analysis as well?
Well, I think the correct word is action. You asked what do protesters think. I was in L.A. and had a protest for Rise Up for Gaza, and there was an international protest, not in D.C., in L.A., in Houston, all around the world, in fact. And you've probably seen some of the pictures if people are on social media. It's been incredible. And really, for a long time now, if you're talking about a group like Palestinian Youth Movement and activists in the street, they're not really paying attention to this because they know the history. They know it's BS. They want to move attention from what politicians say to what can we do? What can we do as people? So a lot of attention was on the Italy strike that you're talking about. How can workers weigh in and stop shipments? Palestinian Youth Movement, one of their initiatives has been Masks Off Maersk. Maersk is a shipping company that is worldwide that delivers weapons to Israel. And the thinking goes, and there have been some successes in different places, that if you can stop the shipment, then that itself, we have to take matters into our own hands. And the move has to move to workers. And I think Italy is ahead. Now, Italy also has a higher union density than we do in America, which is in an issue. I'm going to let people also know, October 24th in Washington, D.C., Chris Smalls and others have called for all the labor leaders to protest the, you know the big union. It's escaping me right now.
UAW?
AFL-CIO.
AFL-CIO, sure.
Yeah, AFL-CIO. Because what we have to say is that unions are also bought in many ways from the politicians in America. We have to be real about that. So unions haven't stepped up. And if we're going to make a real movement on the level of an Italy or someone else, it has to include labor. It has to include workers. Forget, the politicians are not going to do their job. That has been clear. FIFA, and we're talking about banning Israel from sports. They're not going to come around. So it has to come from the people and the pressure and labor. So I would tell everyone in D.C., mark October 24th on your calendar, because we're going to have a huge protest and hold labor accountable. One last thing about Chris Small.
Wait. No. I got to interrupt you real quick. October 24th is a Monday, I believe, not a weekend day. Is that what we sure I'm on that date? I want to double confirm.
You know what? I'm so glad you're here because that is a very, very important point. And I'm talking to you and I'm doing something at the same time. No, it's a Friday. October 24th, it appears to me, is a Friday.
Oh, you're right. I'm really apologize to the listeners. I was looking at the wrong
month.
No, that's good
because it's not a Saturday as most protests are.
So a Friday, October 24th. Mark it the heck down.
And we could bring on Chris really before that. And they want unions to divest from Palestine and make strong statements. And I have to say something. Many people thought when, you know, we just had many people come back from another freedom flotilla, most notably Greta Thunberg, who was previously a darling of the liberals when she was only a climate justice activist. Chris Smalls was a darling of the liberals and the Democratic Party when he was simply a union activist. But with the second that they went to say Free Palestine on October 23, they were dropped like a bad habit.
Yeah, it was who this? New phone, who this?
Right. Exactly. No longer were they on covers of Time magazine or New York magazine. They were radioactive. And when Chris Smalls, like Greta, was beaten in by Israeli prison officials this last week, when that happened, he came back and people didn't realize 2 or 3 weeks later, the San Diego Union Council issued a statement saying we are divesting from Palestine. We want nothing to do with them. And we put Chris Smalls in that statement. So that
divesting from Israel. Divesting from Israel.
Divesting from Israel. And they were the first local union in San Diego to do so. And that was directly connected to the news that was brought there. So for those who say, you know what, why are you going on these trips? It doesn't make sense. You're never going to get the baby formula and the aid to Gaza. That's very silly. It's very myopic. Even when it doesn't work, it helps out that people, the Gazans, know that people are trying desperately, and it also helps out what can happen afterwards in tangible ways back home.
Chuck, let me ask you one quick question on that. I saw some advertisements of No Kings on 1018. Please tell the people about that and what to expect. And is this topic going to be included in No Kings? I mean, what is the direction of this as opposed to, you know, because I just want to try to understand the different protests and what we're going to see at the No Kings on 1018, which is next Saturday.
Well, yeah, that's a great question.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got to interrupt again. Are we sure about that date? Because I thought it was in November. Am I wrong?
Oh, I could be wrong too.
You're wrong twice, DZ.
I'm sorry.
And I disagreed with an opinion earlier, so it's a trifecta.
Well, you don't have a mustache. Sorry, continue.
I do. It's an illusion. But anyway,
Go.
We were on it. So here we go. That's a great question, Atan. October 18th is another No Kings protest. I don't know all the details of what they will be doing at that protest, but I do know one of the previous No Kings protests earlier in the year. And on the same day there was a No Kings protest, there was also a Free Palestine Rise Up for Gaza protest. And, you know, one had a chance to influence the other. And the flyer in the No Kings protest back then had 22 points listed about Trump's fascism. And let's be clear, Trump is fascist as they come. Mm-hmm. And in none of those 22 points was Free Palestine there. So it was somewhat comical at the time. And to say, how are you not having Trump's fascism about Palestine here when this man said he wants a Trump Gaza casino in Palestine? I mean, it makes no sense. So a lot of the Free Palestine protests also used to hold individuals accountable. And for those who don't know, educate on the totality of the fascism that is Donald Trump. You can't leave this out. You can't separate it. So I'm hoping there are going to be some changes. But if there's not some changes, well, there's a group there that is rightfully protesting Trump's fascism. I absolutely support something like that. But we also have to know what fascism is and talk about all of the fascism. You cannot finesse your way out of Palestine. The days of PEP people, progressive, except Palestine, are over, are dead. Because what they're going to do in Gaza, they're going to do to Americans here, and they already are.
They already are. The counterinsurgency we're seeing in places like Chicago, those police captains, they have been being trained in Israel for a generation. That is documentable. That is something they're proud of. You know, this isn't conspiracy theory. People can Google that for themselves. Why are they doing counterinsurgency there? For reasons like right now. This transcends Trump, everybody. He may have done the order. He may have pushed the button. He may have ordered the code red, but just straight up, this has been in the works and in the plans of this country for some time. How do we deal with domestic discontent? Although one thing about Trump is that he's sending troops to places where there is no domestic discontent. It's just a pure power grab in an authoritarian and fascist manner. We're just about out of time. Atan, last word for you, last word for Chuck, and then we'll bring it on out.
Let me just say rest in peace to Lawrence Moulton. We're going to the funeral tomorrow. He's going to have here. A lot of Syracuse guys are coming back. So it's still difficult, you know, to deal with because, you know, we all knew him and loved him as a brother. So just want to say rest in peace to Lawrence Moulton.
Poetry in Moulton. I grew up watching him. He was really special. Chuck, you, sir.
Poetry in Moulton. It was great watching him. It came as a shock to me as well. For those who don't know. And I know where the town is part of the Syracuse family.
Yeah, and then that's a good place to end it as well, because we have absolute love because of Atan on the Collision for everybody in the Syracuse family. Just like somebody who I grew up watching, people like Louis Orr passed away. We always want to give a lot of love to people who gave their lives to that program and gave their lives to basketball, and also now find themselves transitions. Yo, thank you so much to WPFW. Thank you so much to everybody out there fighting for a better world. There's a place for you in this fight, and I don't want people to ever forget that. You just got to get in where you fit in, to quote Too Short. Look, I went full circle. Too Short. For everybody out there, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Abrams and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
Brentwood Arts Exchange presents the Listening Room Series. The next concert is Friday, October 10th, 8 to 10 p.m. featuring singer-songwriters Ayanna Gregory and Free Benjamin, with an evening of music filled with love, healing, and transformation. On November 7th, Sheikh Amala Jabate performs, and Rose Morales on December 5th. Three nights of live music at the Brentwood Arts Exchange. Details via 301-277-2863. That's 301-277-2863, pgparks.com, or on social media at Gateway Arts Center.
WPFW is the media sponsor for the Institute for Policy Studies 49th Annual Letelier Moffitt Human Rights Awards on Thursday, October 9th at 5:30 p.m. Unsung human rights heroes will be celebrated in the memory of the victims of the Pinochet dictatorship and fallen colleagues Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Carpin Moffitt. This year's event takes place at the Friends Meeting House of Washington, D.C., and celebrates domestic awardees Detention Watch Network and Jeanette Vizguerra, an international awardee, National Coordinating Roundtable of Organizations of Retirees and Pensioners of the Republic of Argentina, with musical performance by Navasha Dea. That's the 49th Annual Letelier Moffitt Human Rights Awards, 5:30 p.m., Thursday, October 9th, at Friends Meeting House of Washington, D.C., 2111 Decatur Place Northwest. Details at ips-dc.org/LM49. That's ips-dc.org/LM49. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, DC, we're reigniting the spirit of unity in our community beginning Monday, October 13th through Saturday, October 19th, by commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March and UniFest, two iconic events that shaped our history and continue to inspire our future. Events include prayer calls, a torch run, a lantern peace walk, a recommitment service, and a mini UniFest at Union Temple Baptist Church. This is an opportunity to honor the past and build bridges for a united future for our children and families, reviving the values of the Million Man March and UniFest. Details at UnionTempleDC.com.
The the Zenith Sound Series' first film concert takes place on Saturday, October 11th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at 1817 7th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Presenting live music in an intimate setting with performances by DMV-based musicians across genres, R&B, jazz, neo-soul, and Afro-fusion. Talent, creativity, and artistic voices from the community are uplifted at the Zenith Sound Series. Details at Zenith Sound Series on Instagram and Eventbrite. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
WPFW streaming is temporarily down.